Excellence, The Emperor's New Clothes by Matthew S. Voss. I am fed up with excellence. It's everywhere and nowhere. Googling the word produced more than 100 million hits. Even incorrect spellings yield hundreds of thousands. Claims of excellence surround us. It can be bought. It can be sold. We boast of it in our schools, workplaces, and churches. We attach it to catchphrases promoting our hospitals, middle school athletic programs, and mass-produced restaurant food. Parents despair if they're unable to secure places for their four-year-olds at preschools steeped in the stuff. Pregnant women search for birthing centers of excellence equipped with the latest technology. If you break your arm, you might have it set by an orthopedic surgeon with an excellent rating from an excellent medical school who now works in a hospital with a long-standing tradition of excellence. I became interested in the idea of excellence while collaborating on drafting a philosophy of education statement for a college. During the normal give and take of this type of collective effort, a well-intentioned colleague piped up, "Make sure we throw the word excellence in there somewhere." Why excellence? It didn't change the substance of our statement. When I asked what we meant by excellence, no one seemed to know. It was just the sort of thing that colleges say. Later, I began noticing how hard it is to locate a college or university that does not claim excellence in practice and tradition. Admissions offices are notorious offenders. Could our preoccupation with excellence derive from insecurity about our own inadequacies? Shouldn't excellence be its own testimony? Why all the self-promotion? Does talking about excellence really produce excellence? In our enchantment with excellence, we look down on mediocrity, and people need a little mediocrity in their lives. When we pursue only those things we're good at, or have the potential to be good at, we miss out on a host of enriching experiences that teach us humility and integrate us into a community. Let's face it, most of us have plenty of mediocrity in our lives, but those fumbling efforts are an important part of being human. Our society pushes us to excise the mediocre from our lives so that we can get on with the business of cultivating excellence. It's as though personal and organizational efforts were scored on a two-pole continuum with no middle ground. There's excellence and there's, gasp, mediocrity. Sometimes we avoid trying things that we might not be able to do really well for fear that our efforts might be, well, average. My wife, a high school guidance counselor, sees bright students choosing easier courses over more challenging ones out of fear that the latter might tarnish their grade point averages, thereby diminishing their chances of getting into so-called excellent colleges. To qualify as excellent, their grade point averages must be greater than 4.0. The grade point average, in keeping with our frenzied pursuit of quantification, summarily transforms character, effort, and native ability into an easily decipherable number that can be rounded to two decimal places. What power that number has to distort any educational institution's promotion of meaningful ends. The same students who obsess about their excellent grade point averages select colleges based on reputations for excellence, sometimes irrespective of the suitability of fit and with little real understanding about what counts for excellence. Chasing down excellence sometimes limits our lives. Is this what we really want? Is the excellence for which we clamor really all that helpful? I have my doubts. Excellence and its single-minded pursuit have a dark side that emerges as we go after our individualistic dreams. The push to stand out starts increasingly early in life. As I was eating an excellent bowl of oatmeal one morning, Michelle O'Reckland's article, The Purpose-Driven Summer Camp, caught my eye. The summary reads, quote, "Toasting marshmallows is for slackers. Now kids aim to sharpen their skills and boost their resumes. Is that a good thing?" End quote. O'Reckland describes a new trend in summer camp for approximately 6 million children. No longer do kids go to camp to get away from the pressures of home and school, to relax and have fun, and to learn to set things on fire. Now they go to camp with career goals in mind. For example, she tells of Russell Lyons, quote, "The 10-year-old from San Diego is hoping summer camp will help foster his career in the film industry. Last summer, he spent a week of Pali Overnight Adventures Hollywood Stunt Camp in California's San Bernardino Mountains. There, he got professional instruction on taking 40-foot free falls onto mats and choreographing fight scenes," says Lyons, who already has an agent and occasionally leaves school early to go to auditions. "If I ever have to do my own stunts on a shoot, I'm ready," end quote. Parents drive the demand for these career-minded summer camps. O'Reckland notes that parents expect their kids to be working toward, quote, "a tangible skill or having a high-caliber experience, preferably one that looks good on a college application," end quote. Consequently, we find a host of specialty camps that promote discipline and excellence for 10-year-olds. Yikes! Not only do kids have to perform during the school year, they must perform their way through summer camp as well. In this world, excellence is equated with skill, discipline, and single-mindedness. Admirable qualities, to be sure, but not qualities around which to build a balanced childhood. The pursuit of excellence in youth sports has some downsides as well. A sports columnist for my local paper recently wrote about the permanent arm damage 12-year-olds can sustain in their quest to be excellent pitchers. Apparently, a too early focus on a single sport can strain underdeveloped muscles and tendons in ways that less disciplined multiple sport play might avoid. While we treat it as the enemy of excellence, play for its own sake without adult world goals in mind seems to be good, maybe even essential for children. Perhaps excellent isn't. As I watch my own 6-year-old daughter aimlessly swim, run, and bike, I'm frightened of a world that so easily and so early transforms play into work and fun into discipline. I delight in the unbridled joy she has living in the present. I fear preschools and kindergartens with rigid curricula. I want her to linger here a bit before the disenchanting forces of modernity and the pursuit of excellence claim too much of her humanity. As I see it, the idea of excellence has become uncoupled from the life world, the world as lived. Meaning has slipped from the word. In a world that praises the measurable, excellence is curiously devoid of any real substance, let alone quantifiable criteria. Trying to measure excellence is like measuring love. We can quantify and assess love, but such efforts are distorting because love is a quality, not a quantity. Aspiring to love my wife 50% more in the next quarter misses the point. Similarly, our understanding of excellence is inadequate because we subject it to measurements for which it is ill-suited. The late Columbia University sociologist Robert Merton described the displacement of goals or ends, and our current version of excellence is one such displacement. Merton explains that in order to ensure uniformity and predictability, bureaucracies impose on group members attitudes and sentiments that contribute to the reliability of ends. The problem is that, quote, adherence to the rules, originally conceived as a means, becomes transformed into an end in itself, and an instrumental value becomes a terminal value, end quote. Excellence should be a means to some end, but our overemphasis on it as an essential value leads us to promote it as an end in itself. I am not against excellence. I actually think excellence is a very good thing, but I am against the commodification of an empty excellence. I am against the cessation of childhood in the name of future careers. I am disillusioned by colleges and universities that claim excellence while their students die of alcohol poisoning. In short, I am wary of excellence that advances self while it distorts and disregards community. Perhaps we can redefine excellence in a way that recouples it with real needs and real people in the real world. Maybe one solution is to practice excellence without using the word, thus giving ourselves linguistic space to think about what it means. Or we could all get dressed up in the Emperor's new clothes. How excellent is that?